Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio and Television with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States at 1150 a.m. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and to make this planet a far better and much happier place. And I know with everyone's help, we can do it. We can make this world a better place. Out of This World Radio is the fastest-growing spiritual, psychic, and UFO radio program in the world with listeners in over 70 countries. And today's show will be really, really interesting, I think. During our first hour, I'll be interviewing Dr. Richard Allen Miller and his friend Dr. Nick Begich, coming to us live from Dr. Miller's home in Oregon. Dr. Miller was previously on my program on August 7, 2016, when he spoke about his profound and very interesting work into the paranormal alternative agriculture and metaphysics. Dr. Nick Begich is the eldest son of the late U.S. Congressman from Alaska, Nick Begich Sr., and political activist Peggy Begich. He's had a fascinating career, and he's co-authored with Gene Manning a book called Angels Don't Play This Harp. We'll be talking about his work, his fascinating work, here in a few minutes. During the second hour, I'll be interviewing one of the world's most famous geneticists, Dr. Kazuo Murakami. He'll be coming to us live from Japan. In 2007, the famous Japanese film director Tetsu Shiratori made a film on the life story of Dr. Murakami with a collection of other fascinating interviews with Deepak Chopra, Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, and others. And the film was called The Power of Prayer or Orinori. I showed that several times here in the Seattle area last summer. It's just fascinating. It was about his life story and how he has proved that laughter can activate certain genes, and his study now extends further to love, joy, and especially prayer's effect on DNA. In 2006, he published a very profound and fascinating book called The Divine Code of Life. We'll be talking to Dr. Murakami in about 1 hour. To listen to the show, please go to listen live at www.1150kknw.com. And after the show, you can always listen to programs at www.outofthisworld1150.com. In the Seattle and Vancouver, Canada areas, you can listen to us live on 1150 AM, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Ted Marr, OTW Radio. And before we start, I'd like to thank so much for their wonderful support, and I know that with everyone's help, we can make this planet a much, much better place. I'd like to thank the many wonderful sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing wonderful support, my dear friend Michiko Hayashi, as well as Hiro Moto, Mrs. Emoto, and Dr. Yasu Nimoto of the Emoto Peace Project and Emoto Office in Tokyo, Japan, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric, and my station manager, Eric Krema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. I wanted to tell everyone I've started a spiritual mentoring program. I help people get in touch with guides, talk to family members and loved ones who passed on. And if you're interested in that, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Or you can call me here in the United States on my cell number at 509-750-9793 or toll free at 1-888-879-8339. Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program and supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150 and just click on it. With that, I'd like to thank everyone so much for their donations and support, especially Judith in California, Marie and Alan in Camino Island, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers. Any advertising on this program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services. I also have a new column on my webpage called Ask Ted. If you go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on Ask Ted, I usually have a weekly column on spiritual topics. Next week, I'll be having a column on the inner earth and my visit to the inner earth at the beneath Mount Shasta in August of 2015. So that'll be really interesting. For those interested, I have several beautiful calendars from the Emoto Peace Project. They're full of beautiful pictures of Dr. Emoto's work. And if you're interested, they're just $20 a piece. Just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I have lots of wonderful events to tell you about, but I think what I'll do is hold off because I know that Dr. Begich, he needs to go off to to another interview after my interview with him now. So I'll start now and And we can we'll finish up his interview a little early, and I can go on to my announcements then. Dr. Begich and Dr. Miller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful.
And Richard is right standing by.
Wonderful. Do you mind if I call you Nick, or how would you
Nick
like?
Nick is fine. Please do.
Okay, great, great, great. Well, you've done some fascinating things, and one of the most interesting things I know I heard about you years ago, Nick, was your book on harp, How Angels Don't Play This Harp, H-A-A-R-P. And it's probably one of those dark projects that, you know, we American taxpayers pay for, but we don't know anything about it. We know it's up somewhere up in Alaska. I want to tell all my listeners as well that you've published many articles in science, politics, and education, and you're a well-known lecturer, having presented throughout the United States and in 19 countries. You've been on, also appeared on dozens of television documentaries and other programs around the world, including the BBC Television, CBC Television, Telemundo, and others. You've also served as an expert witness and speaker before the European Parliament, and you've done a lot of just fascinating work. Your website, if people would like to know more information, is www.earthpulse.com. And with that, Nick, I'd love to turn the floor over to you. How did you ever get interested in, for example, harp? That seems like you're from Alaska.
Well, it was an obscure topic, really, and it was purely by accident. I had been reading a journal, and there was a very short article, just maybe 5 column inches, that mentioned harp. And, you know, it made some pretty outrageous claims about what it was, and it was supposedly in Alaska. So I spent some time trying to find the source material to support that, because, you know, being from Alaska, it's really a huge place in terms of geography, but a small place in terms of news, you know. So
sure.
Having not heard about it, looking into it, I spoke with some of the environmental organizations in our area and some of the others I thought might be following something like this. They all had a little bit of information, and as I started looking at it and then pulling the original patents surrounding the technology, I realized it was much different and seemed at least worth my attention. So I sent a good bit of that material to folks I knew that had the requisite engineering and physics background to review the material. And, you know, it was just as it was as said, you know. I mean, it had this implications for weather modification for a number of experiments in the ionosphere, a layer that's above the Earth's surface that's an energized layer. But basically, it was a very big, a huge radio transmitter being constructed in Alaska, and caught my interest. I ended up writing an article about it that got Gene Manning's attention in Canada, who had been following it for a few years, the technology in any case. And so we decided to collaborate, and initially we were talking about an article, and it just was too much information. It became a book project, and, you know, that was 1994 when we first published the first version of Angels Don't Play This Harp.
There were some rumors going around. I'm sure you heard them, Nick, and I do want to ask you this question regarding the hurricane that hit New Orleans back, I believe, in the 2004, 2005, that the hurricane actually had been destined to hit Dallas, but somehow it diverted course and headed straight for New Orleans and wiped out that area.
Well, you know, I hear this virtually every time there is a major hurricane disaster, and it was because the idea of steering or altering the course of a hurricane was in the context of the patents on HARP.
Okay.
And it is possible. Ben Eastland, the inventor of HARP, said before he passed away is you could manipulate gravitational waves and weather systems utilizing a system like HARP. Tech he presented to the European Space Agency and to FEMA and NASA on some different ways to manipulate weather systems, you know, using a HARP-type instrument. And in one specific instance, he even went so far as to suggest you could manipulate tornadoes by heating up one of the weather fronts. You know, when you have weather fronts coming in together, cold front and a warm front, you could actually heat the warm front and make a more intense tornado, or conversely, heat the cold front and dampen the energy of, say, a condition where normally a tornado would form.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing, manipulating the heat energy, is really that sort of application. And the other is to push or to steer jet streams, to move them around a bit so you can then move huge weather fronts different directions.
I have heard some people say talk about how the jet stream has been diverted around California to create a drought there. And instead of, so that California now is still in a drought, it's been in a drought for many years. And since it produces about a third of the United States fruits and vegetables, it's very bad, of course, for the economy and, of course, for the farmers there.
Right.
What have you heard? I mean, you've researched this more than I have.
It's possible to do this. And,
right.
And this is why this technology is so interesting to governments. In fact, it was Rumsfeld during the last administration that suggested that we abrogate the environmental treaties we have in place to not use environmental manipulation as a weapon of war, in the same way that we abrogated the ABM treaty during the Clinton administration, many people forgot about. Mm-hmm. But the idea was that because we could manipulate weather in such a way that we could, in fact, create those conditions. I mean, think about North Korea as an example. You know, they've experienced drought for long enough to damn near starve them out. And when you think about it, at some point, you know, maybe the U.S. gets invited in to be the rescue workers in some of these situations. So you have the ability to create significant covert war, which is what got Rumsfeld's attention. You know, that was kind of his specialty, was, mm-hmm. you know, killing people without permission and doing it with weather as opposed to bombs, bullets, and guns. You know, you got the ideal
right.
situation from his perspective, and that's the way he was referring to it. And so is it possible? Yes, HAARP can do these kinds of things, but, you know, most likely there's other systems available to them as well.
Do you think the California drought has been engineered, or do you think it's a natural occurrence?
I wouldn't say,
okay.
only because, you know, I've not seen anyone tracking, say, a specific man-made signal oriented around California on a sustained basis
okay.
to create that condition. So
okay.
I couldn't say. That is possible. On a sustained basis, that's a big equation. So it would seem to me that it would be relatively easy to monitor and determine if that was the case.
Well, if the HAARP technology could steer the jet stream away from California, so theoretically they wouldn't get any precipitation
right.
or rain,
right.
would
right.
it be also possible, whoever controls HAARP, to steer the jet stream into California so they can get the needed rain to grow crops?
Right. That's it. And, you know, that you could do either. You know, and this is the thing about weather modification is once you start playing with it in one part of the world, it's really mm-hmm. not possible to model the whole system
mm-hmm.
and determine, you know, what that's going to do on the other side of the world. So you solve one problem for yourself and you create 10 others for,
sure.
you know, other countries. And this is the problem. You know, weather doesn't recognize political boundaries as such, and so consequently you save one situation, you create other problems. And, you know, weather modification is even offered by private companies these days. People can look on the internet and even seek it out, and during various Olympics and things, Moscow and China both offered to, you know, create weather changes. And in fact, Moscow at one time, if you remember the big fires in Malaysia years ago, in Indonesia, and the smoke was coming into that whole region and just choking everyone out. And
mm-hmm.
the Russians at the time, according to the Wall Street Journal, offered to create a artificial cyclone and just kind of blow it all out of the mm-hmm. area.
Interesting.
You know, so
interesting.
It's not just the United States, and it's not just HAARP. Many countries, most of the sophisticated countries, have this capability. And even back in April of 1997, Secretary of Defense Cohen was lecturing on weapons of mass destruction. Now, this is 4 years before 9/11, and one of the things he talked about was using electromagnetic waves to create earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and weather changes, all of which are the kind of technologies that, you know, that our country certainly possesses. But he was attributing that to terrorist states, which uh-huh. I think is pretty profound when you think about it.
Well, I have to tell you something very interesting. I have a little bit different perspective on all of this because I'm a psychic and I've been in touch with the other side for the last 22 years. And I've done a lot of past life regressions. And in my own life, my spiritual journey started actually in Atlantis 12,500 years ago when there was a crazy group of people, as in my opinion, similar to today, who are experimenting with weather modification and technologies that they have no business doing. And back in Atlantean times, they ended up blowing up the entire continent, the entire civilization. And from my own perspective, I think a lot of these same spirits who were present back in the destruction of Atlantis have come back now, and they're replaying their karmic roles again except this time I think society as a whole will get control of them and their technology so they don't blow up the planet. I mean, I think they're what you described with HAARP potentially could be very could cause a lot of harm on the planet, could cause some good too. And I just you know, there's no accountability over it. People don't know about it. If you mention HAARP to the average citizen here in the United States or elsewhere in the world, they think you're talking about a musical instrument.
Right. But you know, and the thing about it is it's just one maybe one symptom of the underlying situation. I think because when you look at technology and sort of where it's taking us in this century is a much different place than many envisioned, and a lot of it is because so much is concentrated in military and defense. When you think about how big the budgets are and how much flows into that direction, and these are programs classified to even where the extent where congressional leadership goes in and has a conversation about whatever they're doing in the Pentagon, and it's a closed conference, right, closed hearings, and no staff, no notes are allowed. You can't discuss what you're learning or not learning in there outside of the hearing room. So basically, you've got a bunch of people, congressmen and senators, with no science background whatsoever, being locked into a room for the dog and pony show and no way to intellectually or otherwise know whether they're being told the truth and have an opportunity to really understand what they're being told. I think that's the danger right now, because countries, what makes countries powerful in the 21st century is, in fact, their technology. And so without oversight, and there's virtually none when you put it in that context, for any of it. And the basic concepts even may be difficult for some of our leadership to really understand. And I think that's the root of the problem, and at the same time is sort of driving a lot of the problems that we're seeing internationally today.
I want to make one quick quote from Professor Albert Einstein, who I've studied a lot. And he always felt when he was alive that that there was a schism, a separation between the technological advancements from, for example, the atomic bomb, which he regretted, by the way, after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He said it was the worst mistake of his life, and if he had to do it over again, he would have become either a cook or a dishwasher in a restaurant.
Yeah.
But the problem, you see, is that we've had all these technological advances, but there's been no the spiritual advancement has not kept pace with the same kind of technological advancements. And the same problem that I see happen back in Atlantis is actually could happen. I don't think it'll happen now, but it could happen now, where some of these weapons get out of hand, and because there's no spiritual advancement along with this technological advancement, we end up blowing ourselves up. I don't see that future for us. I think our future is very bright, but it's a factor that you have to keep in mind, I think.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And, you know, when you think about all of this, the advances right now, what the military is calling a revolution in military affairs, where the technology is so dramatically different. They look at it like when gunpowder was introduced in the Middle Ages in Europe, or atomic weapons in the last century. And so when you think about these new technologies, you know, as they begin to advance, I mean, therein lies the real risks, because they're not using bombs and bullets and the standard ordnance. These will be weapons based on intelligence, based on computers, privacy-related type of issues, as well as remote control, robotics, drones, and ultimately electromagnetic fields that can affect human beings or operating systems or hardware, what the Air Force is now calling controlled effects in some of their publications.
I'm sure if you Nick, you've heard what Edward Snowden said. In his release documents, that much of this technology actually doesn't originate from Earth, but rather from a group of very creepy entities called the Reptilians, who are negatively based, who's given us a lot of this technology, and much of the and so that's the problem, because much of this technology is negative, and there's no oversight to it, nothing at all.
Right, and that's exactly it, and therein lies the root of the problem, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you stop and think about, you know, this whole concept is the lack of accountability, just the way the systems evolve, and lack of oversight. And when you think about it, you know, our science is pretty compartmentalized. I mean, everything's sort of separated into its smallest pieces.
Right.
And, you know, ultimately, you don't get this cross-fertilization that you would in so many other areas. And as a consequence, when you think about that, your science doesn't get the benefit of everybody else's knowledge, which I think is a big mistake. The Russians in the old days, in the USSR days, they did a different thing. They consolidated all the specialists of all the different fields, put them in one room, and that's the way they kept up with us in our science for a lot less of a budget and a lot more powerfully. But when you look at that system, the secrecy system that grew out of the Cold War and continues to this day has really sort of undermined so much of the republic in the way that we're supposedly going to operate. You know, I mean, we don't even have to need to know how to build each of these things, but we ought to know conceptually what they do and have an opportunity to debate whether they should even happen or not. Weather modification being a point in, a case in point, if it ever is going to be done, and I say if with a big if, it should be done in the open light of day with a whole lot of people involved, because it's not just our weather systems. I mean, we have the potential for affecting everyone on a planetary basis. So these should not be allowed from the standpoint of military research in some kind of information vacuum.
Well, I have to tell you, I had a wonderful astrologer named Susan Miller 2 years ago on my show. And she said, there's one thing I remember from her interview 2 years ago, and she said that this now, through into the 2020s and 2030s and beyond for the rest of the next 1,000 years, is a time of truth, because the entire planet is shifting into the higher dimensions. And as it shifts into the higher dimensions, fourth and then quickly into the fifth and sixth dimensions, that things that are true become even more truer, and things that are false will become self-evident and fall by the wayside. And I think a lot of this is coming out now, not only about your wonderful work with HARP, Nick, but also with the Secret Space Program. I had Randy Kramer on my show last week. He was with the Secret Space Program, lived on Mars actually for 17 years, and the moon as well. And he says that there are clinics run by the U.S. military on the dark side of the moon that can cure cancer. And what they do, they put the person into a holographic, he says a holographic bed. They program the computer to get rid of the cancer, and the person pops out without any cancer. And my question is, why isn't that technology available here on this Earth? How come it's so secret? How come this technology at HARP is so secret? Why don't they tell us? What gives them the right to keep this information away from us, especially when we're paying their bills?
Well, I don't disagree with you. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, at this point in history, and, you know, one time we proposed, when we were doing a lot of work with the European Parliament, was to put together a mechanism, a whistleblower mechanism that you could use for either government or private sector, where things that were, you know, important that the public know have an opportunity to see the light of day.
Sure.
And you know, Snowden, you know, I look at the stuff he released and what he tried to do. You know, there should be a formal way to do that. I mean, because really, when our government is digging through garbage cans and pulling out information and blackmailing people and extorting people and bribing people with pallets of money around the world and kidnapping them and torturing them, so those are all felons, you know. Those are all felonies if you stop and think about it for a minute. And that's supposed to project the American public into the future. I think there again is the accountability issue of government security agencies going really nuts in terms of their approach. And when you look at the weapons technologies on the backdrop of this and surveillance technologies on the backdrop of this, this has put us all in, from my perspective at least, a great deal of risk going forward. And to use fear, which is what's been done, to move the herd, so to speak. And if you really look at the brain, which is part of the other areas that I research and lecture on, the brain engaged in fear or any of the negative kinds of emotions, you know, you create the flight or fight response, where you get incoherent brain patterns, not those associated with higher states of awareness or consciousness or higher ordered thinking or focus learning or any of the things that lead to creative solutions to complex problems, just the opposite. And maybe that's the weapon of choice, right? I mean, it's pretty easy to create anxiety and fear in the population. All you have to do is watch the 6 o'clock news. And yeah. So I think if we stop it for a moment and really look at sort of how the information feeds us and what we allow into our system to generate the kind of stresses that most people are under right now. And that's the root and the initial enemy of all of this. To create change, we really have to get rid of some of that individual stress so we can begin to think more clearly and act more responsibly.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Rick. And before I forget, I want to bring on my friend, Dr. Miller, on the show. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, he's right here. Let me put him on.
Okay, good.
Hi there.
Hey, Rick, I want to apologize. Nick and I got to talking, and then I thought, well, I probably should bring you on, too. So,
yeah, that's fine. Nick, I'm on all the time. Nick is a rarity, and it's wonderful to have him with me.
Oh, good, good. Well, one thing I wanted to say to both of you gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on today. I think a lot of the negativity in the technology that we've seen in the United States and around the world, in especially military projects, stems from a collaboration agreement that the United States President Eisenhower signed with a group of creepy negative entities called the Reptilians in 1954.
Yeah, David Icke, there you go.
Well,
you know, I'm going to say something about Reticulan and things like that. If imagination is reality, then we're creating our own apocalypse and aliens. And in terms of shape-shifting, we now have a paint, which is a liquid crystal that holds a holographic field. You can do other kinds of stealth. And Boeing has been developing stealth around microwave. But let me say this. You know, a liquid crystal is an amorphous semiconductor that is moving. And you can set up a holographic field from a pocket and have a different looking face, for example, as current technology. Mm-hmm. Imagination is reality, and we're probably creating, like the X-Files. The X-Files is no longer about aliens. It's about some creepy old men that got a hold of alien technology maybe 70 years ago. Or maybe even worse, maybe it was during cowboy times. Carrington, who knows? What I do know is that I am responsible for the thoughts I choose to entertain, and I need to keep my eye on the ball.
You're right. I agree with you. Absolutely agree with you there, Rick. We do
you know,
need,
I mean,
yes.
There's corruption everywhere. It's just in Grants Pass, Oregon. I mean, you know, it's all weird, and it's at every level, and it's at every level in ourselves. That means that if you can see this evil out there, it means that the reason you can see it is because it's within as a part of your possibilities. So you have to take responsibility for that in terms of realizing that we're not going to be able to save this world as we do it, you know, heading into a big black hole.
That
children are watching us, and that's how they learn how to be pedophiles.
Sure.
And drug addicts. They watch how we did it.
Yeah.
And so we have to take the responsibility of at least trying to walk or talk.
Well, my next guest next hour will be a fascinating individual called Dr. Kazuo Murakami. He's one of the world's most famous geneticists, and his scientific studies have shown that there are actual genes for turning on good health, and when you laugh and you're in a positive mood and think positive about the future and about
I know. Listen, if you want to know what an alien is that was hiding in plain sight, try your fourth genome in your blood type. And the war for Earth is going on inside each of us as a metaphor. You know, there's lots of different ways to look at this. It's interesting to ask your genetic friend whether he's a neo-Darwinist or into epigenetics. And the two are mutually close to each other, and epigenetics is making some incredible breakthroughs right now in terms of how to take psyche into matter.
Well,
your thoughts structure the water and the universe around you. Literally, we've got the physics now of how that works.
Absolutely, and that was, of course, Masaru Emoto's wonderful research before
Emoto
passed away.
Emoto is like most of these guys. They're a little zen. Yes, you can use Riemann spectrophotometry to see if a bunch of Buddhists change the pollution in a lake. But just sitting around and giving thanks at dinner changes everything.
That's true. It does. It does.
It's the rituals. It's the recognition or celebration of an urban myth or whatever mythology that you're following, to be honoring it with a ritual. That's what a ritual is.
Well, on almost every program, I always give a water prayer to help clean up Fukushima.
Good luck.
I'll be.
Listen to this. New York City right now, I don't know if you've heard about what's happening at Indian Point, but 22 miles away, and now Cuomo yesterday is saying it's worse than Chernobyl. And that's 22 miles from New York City.
I'm sorry. I think our newspapers out here were all full of different entertainment and sports scores, so we didn't get that news out here on the West Coast.
More like the Greeks and the Romans, gladiators.
No, we didn't.
It's pretty serious. Wow. And in fact, it's Hanford in Washington, where I grew up, is leaking in the Columbia River.
Wow.
And
wow.
So right now. And, I mean, you know, we don't know if it's from Fukushima or Hanford now.
Right. Right.
You know, coming down the Columbia. And so it's having an effect on everything. The global warming is changing the algae. The red algaes are, of course, stunning off our sea life. And the whole thing is, you know, I don't even know how it's going to play.
Sure. Well, no, I think things will turn out for us. I really do, Rick. That's one thing I'm an eternal optimist. I'm an eternal optimist.
No,
eternal optimist.
The last evil in Pandora's box. Get a grip. You know, you've got to be active about this.
Oh, I am. I am.
Going on? Yeah.
Well,
so,
Rick,
what's Bellingham doing? You're in Bremerton. Not Bremerton. You're in
Bellevue.
Bellevue, yeah. Right. What's Bellevue doing like right now, your weather?
Oh, it's a beautiful sunny day. It's about 80 degrees. There's lots of roses out.
80 degrees, Nick laughed.
No, it's pouring down rain here, but it's a beautiful day. It's lovely here in the studio.
I love Seattle. I miss Seattle. Seattle was not now, but when I grew up, Seattle was one of the coolest cities in the world.
It still is.
Really, everything was laid back. It was like
still is.
Whatever happened in San Francisco would happen 2 years later, divided by four in Seattle.
Oh, funny. That's funny.
Well, yeah, that was the way we did it. And now, San Francisco, who? You know, it's more like L.A.
Yeah.
It's live from New York.
I still like San Francisco. Beautiful town.
Yeah. Seattle was very cool. I remember Medina and how you had to take lifts to go down to the lake.
I wasn't around back then, so I don't know.
It's an older day.
Seattle
was very cool.
Oh,
the
good.
Second
Still's
floating
nice.
Bridge, I remember one year when it went out. Mm-hmm. It actually went underwater and broke and things like that, and they had to repair it.
No.
Can you imagine what rush hour was like then?
Oh, boy. probably not very many cars. Say, Rick, I wanted to ask.
Actually, Seattle's always been a bottleneck. It's not like, you know, Boston. But now it is. It took me 3 hours just going across town to go to Washelli's to bury my father.
Yeah.
Place has really changed.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of traffic here, but it's still a beautiful city, really nice place.
I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look, you saw mountains and water.
That's right. Very beautiful.
Any direction. Rick, that's right.
Yeah. Rick, I wanted to ask Nick something, by the way.
Sure.
Nick, I wanted to ask you a follow-up question, if I may.
Sure.
I don't know if you've done any research on this, but how do chemtrails fit in with HAARP? Are those two linked together? Because I've heard that with chemtrails, the government sprays a lot of aluminum. And I've heard, I can't verify this, any of this, but I've just heard, been told that the aluminum actually somehow works in with HAARP to send electromagnetic signals. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I hear that all the time, but I've never seen definitive documents that I would say evidence. That doesn't mean they're not there. I just haven't seen them. Mm-hmm. The need for HAARP to interact with something else isn't really there. You could, I mean, through effects of radiochemistry, you can send a radio signal in that's shaped and pulsed and in a certain frequency range and create a resonance effect with chemical constituents to create all kinds of things. But do you need to do that? Probably not. The chemtrails, contrails issue, I don't follow it. There's other people doing it.
Sure.
And a lot of what I see surrounding that issue is a little soft. I mean, just because of the way the sampling is being done, some of those things I have concerns about. But there are other people that are more informed on that than I am. As it relates to HAARP, you really don't need anything else. Although, you know, you can experiment with other things. I know with HAARP, they used barium at one point in rockets that they launched up into the magnetic field lines so that when they activated HAARP to create various effects, you got an air glow where you could actually see, visually see the way the energy was shaped. So you could see that kind of corkscrewing motion wrap itself around the magnetic field lines, which is one of the effects they were trying to get. So I've seen that side of it in terms of some of the chemicals used in conjunction with HAARP.
I have been in touch with a former U.S. military pilot who was a pilot of one of these jets flying over the United States, dumping all this garbage into our air here through chemtrails.
Right.
He fled to Sweden, where he's been given political asylum now, and I've been trying to get him on my program. So
I think that there's a lot to be said for that type of experiment, whether or not it's related to HAARP or not. In fact, there was documentation of military at different times using spraying as a way to sort of dump viruses into the population and track the way they spread. Hmm. And, you know, a lot of people go, well, did that really happen? And, yeah, it actually did. It was reported at one point by the government under Freedom of Information Acts. But even during the Clinton administration, you know, Secretary of Energy O'Leary acknowledged 500,000 victims of human experimentation. This is what the American government at the time acknowledged, of people within the United States experimented on, from everything from injecting syphilis into black Americans.
Very dark period in our history.
Radioactive
Very
iodine, right?
Period.
And yeah. No one's been held accountable for that.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it goes on, and nobody, once again, they acknowledge it, but where's the accountability and all that?
Sure.
I mean, people should be in jail for this.
I have to ask both you and Rick, a question. What good is HAARP? Why shouldn't we just shut it down tomorrow? Why do we need it anyway?
Well, I mean, HAARP is a two-edged sword. On the one hand, through experiments, you gain a lot of knowledge about the ionosphere, which all of our global communication relies on. So, I mean, I can see some of the validity in that, and that's what people point to. Mm-hmm. But in terms of risk right now and the other things that are going on, I think it should be shut down, or at least a moratorium until more responsible people are operating it and running programs that are in the open light of day and in a way that we might be able to use it. But for now, I think it's better to set it aside than moving it forward.
I mean, if for example, if it's true that they can move the jet stream, and I have a lot of listeners in San Francisco, Los Angeles, throughout California on my show. Why don't they use HAARP to alter the jet stream so that the crops and the farmlands in California can get some actual water rather than being drought stricken for years? Why can't they use it for something good?
Well, again, the risks associated with it I think are pretty high. I would guess. In fact, the late Rosalie Bertell had mentioned at one point it was likely that that's the justification that HAARP planners would use for bringing it forward and doing all the other things they're doing as well, is this idea of stabilizing environmental systems or even dealing with pollutants in the upper atmosphere where you can knock out certain pollutants or you can create effects where ozone is replenished. And those kinds of things you can also do with HAARP. They're within the patents. They talk about them throughout the patents. And those aren't being discussed right now, but I would bet Rosalie is correct. When controversy gets to the point of actually shutting it down, it'll be these things that government points to as, our saving grace to continue the program.
I have to ask you this question, Nick. From your research, can they use HAARP to take out the radiation from Fukushima or Chernobyl?
I couldn't answer that. I really would. I just don't know the answer to that.
Okay. I know that there was a huge radioactive plume of water coming from Fukushima 5 years ago. I actually started in 2011. And then in 2014, it disappeared completely off the West Coast and throughout the Pacific. And my sources tell me that we actually had help, benevolent help, from the Galactic Alliance, which is an alliance of 435 million planets, 7 trillion entities, with technology that's up to 100,000 years ahead of us. And they stepped in, and they weren't going to let us commit suicide, so they cleaned up much of the Pacific.
Yeah, I don't know. It's outside of my area.
Okay.
That's a Rick Miller question. I should give you back to Rick for a moment.
Rick,
we have to get off the air. We've just got a few more minutes.
Okay, sure.
And
sure.
He's standing by, so let me put Rick on. Hold on one moment.
Okay, great.
The Ricky Rocket.
Hey, Rick, did you hear about that? That how there was a huge plume of radioactive water coming from Fukushima back about 5 years ago? And then...
Oh, no, yeah. No, there's no question. Even today, Energy News has a whole list of faults. Actually, Fukushima at this moment is out of control by the people that are managing. That is their words. It's out of control. That means it now needs international oversight immediately.
Well, I'd like to share something with you from Dr. Emoto. Of course, he passed away in 2014. And in 2013, he did a very interesting experiment. He took some radioactive water from the Fukushima area, and he put two words on the side of the bottle containing the water, love and gratitude. And within 24 hours, the radiation was completely gone.
That's the Emoto Farm. Ukraine came up with fullerene waters, where they gave lethal doses of radiation to rats and then fed them fullerene waters, and there was a 95% recovery. And that is now being duplicated and reproduced in Russia.
Wonderful.
A fullerene is exclusion zone water, H3O2, as a single molecule inside a C60 carbon atom, carbon buckyball. And they form nanotubes that go in as a super antioxidant and isolate ionizing radiation. However, it is my prediction that within your lifetime, the continent of Japan will not even exist as a continent. And right now, all the children, you know, in that ledge that it's sitting on, a single 8.4, and Japan is gone from history.
I don't see that happening.
I hope not. Yeah.
I don't see that happening at all. I think that's doom and gloom myself, but I don't.
Well, you look at the precipice that it's on.
Right.
It's in a very precarious position. And if you go to the NETC.com, that's the Nuclear Emergency Tracking Center, and you take a look at what's going on now, Japan is lit up like a candle.
Well,
and 48% of the children now have some form of thyroid anomaly. That's documented national news.
Well,
it's terrible what's happening.
If the Galactic Alliance hadn't stepped in when they did several years ago, Japan would have been much worse off. But I've been to Tokyo. I was in Tokyo several times last year for different conferences, and I mean, people are doing much better there. And
I hope so. I don't know what's causing the sea life to die off. I don't know that it's Fukushima. However, there's a statement to the press as of yesterday: out of control. No solution.
Well, I don't like to say no solution because you know what? You create your reality.
That's what they're saying. I mean, they don't know how to do it.
Well, we'll be talking about that during my next hour with Dr. Murakami from Japan.
Good.
But the thing is that if they say there's no solution, guess what? There's no solution. But there is a solution.
That's because of attitude. That's right. That glass is half empty.
That's right, exactly.
Yes.
And if just like when somebody has cancer and they says, "Where are you going to die tomorrow?" Guess what happens? The person dies tomorrow.
That's right. Belief systems. And
so it's belief systems.
So I hadn't have believed it.
You know, anyway, I know you guys have to get going.
Thank you for having us, Ted. And it's an honor to have Nick as my friend and having him stay here for a few days. Thank you for
Wonderful. Now, one thing I want to caution Nick on is that if Rick makes you a cup of coffee, make sure that he puts sugar in it rather than salt. So,
that's right.
I was visiting.
Hey, I appreciate being on with you today, and I look forward to it again sometime. And I just wish you well in your part of the Northwest.
Well, thank you. I mentioned that because when I visited Rick, it was well-meaning.
And this is Major Tom, 2,000 light years from home.
All right. Nick, are you there?
I am.
Okay, great. I just want to thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to say last few minutes?
Just I appreciate everything that we're trying to do out there, and just keep up the good work, and let's see if we can change the direction this planet's headed.
Okay, great. Now, I have a lot of listeners in Oregon, too. Where will you be speaking tonight? Would you like to tell people where you'll be speaking?
I'll be speaking in Ashland and the
library.
At the library, and I'll be there for 7 till 9 p.m. It's pretty limited seating. What is the name of that venue?
It's the Oregon Blue Skies Project.
It's the Oregon Blue Skies Project.
On geoengineering.
Yeah, so it should be pretty interesting, and we're looking forward to doing that this evening.
Well, if I wasn't 9 hours away, I'd love to come down and see you guys.
Great. Maybe next time, maybe when I'm in the Seattle area.
Okay.
We'll meet personally, and my best to everyone again in the Northwest.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Nick, and thank you so much, Rick, for coming on today. Really enjoyed having you both on. All right. Well, my friends, that was Dr. Rick Miller and his friend Nick Begich coming to us live from his home in Oregon. Just a fascinating interview. I wanted to continue with some announcements of some things coming up. On March 4th and 5th next month, I'll be a speaker at a UFO conference in Ocean Shores at the Quinault Indian Resort. For information, just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or call me anytime at 509-750-9793. For those of you in Finland, I'll be speaking at a spiritual conference on the future of humanity in Helsinki, Finland. It'll be open to the public on May 14th and 15th. We'll have some incredibly interesting people, including Professor Jerry Pollack of the University of Washington, who's one of, in my opinion, one of the world's most famous water scientists, Professor Irvin Laszlo, one of the world's most famous philosopher of science, shamans from the Hopi tribe in Arizona, Russia and Africa, and Mitch Kohayashi, among many other wonderful people of the Immortal Peace Project in Tokyo. The conference will be open to the public on May 14th and 15th, and for more information or tickets, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. From June 10th to the 13th, 2016, in a few months, I'll be having my second annual Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington, off of exit 114 on Interstate 5. We'll have many wonderful speakers, including Scott Lemriel of the Say Race Agenda, who's had actual face-to-face contact with benevolent advanced humans and others from the Galactic Alliance for the past 55 years. The first day of the conference on Friday, June 10th, will be free and open to the public, so you'll be able to get free psychic readings and free spiritual healings. I do this as a way of giving back to the community, and people can meet the people who will be there. Then on the June 10th and 12th, it'll be same cost as last year, which is $197. On June 13th, we'll have a very special demonstration of what's called Hado machines. Now, the Hado machines are a diagnostic tool being brought in from the Emoto office in Tokyo. The way they work is that you place your hand on an electronic pad, and it analyzes whatever spiritual or physical condition you may have, and it recommends a treatment. And what they'll do is that they program water, the vibration of water, to help you with any kind of spiritual or health condition. It's very interesting the way it works. Dr. Emoto, of course, said that everything was Hado or vibration in his wonderful work when he was alive. So it makes a lot of sense that if you adjust the vibration, your vibration to cure illness, it should really help. On August 19th, 20th, and 21st of 2016, I'll be a keynote speaker at a worldwide spiritual conference in the Dominican Republic in the Caribbean. If you'd like more information, please go to their website at www.paxluxemisonmaryundi.com. That's paxluxemisonmaryundi.com. Or you can go to my radio website at www.outofthisworld1150.com for the conference. On August 25th, right after that conference, I'll be taking a group of up to 20 people to see John of God in Brazil. For those who don't know about John of God, he's a wonderful medium who's been able to contact Jesus and other higher spirits to help with almost any physical or spiritual condition. Underneath his healing clinic, which is located about an hour and a half to 2 hours by car from Basilia, that's where we fly in, I'm told there's a 2-mile-long vein of quartz, pure quartz crystal underneath it. It's a powerful, very powerful spiritual magnet for his work. In my opinion, I think John of God is one of the world's greatest mediums, and I'm very honored to visit him. For more information, please go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com or email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. It's taken me some time to work out the details for that, but we should have a lot more details on the website within the next week or two. I want to tell you some good news. I know I've been talking about this for months now, but my new Out of This World television show will start production on March 1st, 2016, in less than 2 weeks. And my first guest will be the very talented and lovely Michiko Hayashi, who's the director of the wonderful Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan. We'll have a series of interviews with her, which will be broadcast on Comcast, cable channel 22. For those of you outside of this area, you'll also be able to see it on YouTube as well. In the future, I'd like to expand the program to the Seattle and Vancouver, Canada markets as well. And I want to thank everyone from my new production crew who's been offering to help out with the production of Out of This World Television, including Rogers, Amos, Bob Hoyt, Dan, Devona Grimes, and my channel operations manager, Bill Oliphant, as well as Deborah Vincel, the station manager. There's one thing else that I ran across late last night while I was working. For those of you in the Seattle area and in beautiful Vancouver, Canada, there will be a very, very special presentation by Edward Snowden at Simon Fraser University. I'm getting the information now. It'll be held, I believe, let me look at this here, I believe it's April 6th in That's right. April 6th at Simon Fraser University. If you're interested in going up to he won't be there himself, but he'll be available by Skype, and he will be taking questions from the public. He'll be interviewed by a correspondent with the Canadian Broadcasting Company at Simon Fraser. And it should be very interesting. Of course, Vancouver is a beautiful city. It's one of the most beautiful cities, I think, in the world. And it's only about 2.5 hours north of Seattle. So if you are interested in going up, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or call me anytime at 509-750-9793. Or you can also call me toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. Quickly, for those of you in the Olympia Thurston County area, the county commissioners there are holding a meeting you should be aware of on Tuesday, February 23rd in Building 1 in Room 280 at 2 p.m. that afternoon. They'll be considering whether they should criminalize their land use and planning code. I know it sounds strange, but currently if you, for example, build a ramp for a handicapped person, and if you don't get a permit for it, it's a civil penalty, but they will make all those kinds of land use violations crimes, and if you have enough of them, that they'll be considered felonies and you can go to prison. But anyway, if you are interested, you can contact my friend Wally Brown at 360-446-1015, and he can give you a lot more information. One thing I always like to talk about is the Fukushima and helping the wonderful children there and the people there, and also the Emoto Peace Project. You know, the world I disagree with all due respect to my dear friend Rick Miller, who was just on now, when he was mentioning that study that there was no solution for Fukushima. There is a solution to Fukushima, because I believe that all of us on this planet are powerful spiritual beings who can co-create with the Creator, the Supreme Being who made all of this, to create a much better and much happier planet. And with that goal in mind, I've been told that by my friends in the Galactic Alliance that if we send lots of love and light to the children of Fukushima and to the Emoto Peace Project, that that'll really help clean up the pollution around Fukushima. As I mentioned earlier this hour, up until just 2 years ago, there was a huge radioactive plume of water coming straight from Fukushima to the West Coast, Bullseye, Seattle, and Vancouver, Canada. If that had come in, much of Seattle and Vancouver would have been uninhabitable by this year, 2016. But what happened is that the Galactic Alliance stepped in with their technology, which is up to 100,000 years ahead of us, and they cleaned it all up. So there is some radiation, of course, coming from Fukushima, but I've been told that the Galactic Alliance is not going to let us commit suicide. But they do want us to do this prayer, so I'm asking everyone around the world to please say this prayer three times to help the people and children of Fukushima and the Emoto Peace Project. If you could say this after me three times. Water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. Again, water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. And one more time, water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. This is based upon the Ho'oponopono, which was Dr. Masaru Emoto's favorite prayer. And I know that by saying that, it'll really help. The Emoto Peace Project distributes wonderful children's books around the world to teach children between the ages of 3 and 12 the valuable lessons of love and gratitude, with the goal that by teaching these children these wonderful lessons, they will grow up to make a much better and happier planet. I urge everyone to support the Emoto Peace Project and their wonderful director, Michiko Hayashi, and of course, Hiro Emoto, Mrs. Emoto, in every way they can. For more information, please see their wonderful website at www.emotopeaceproject.net. And just quickly, we've got about a minute left. I want to give you a quick introduction to Dr. Murakami, who will be joining us live from Tokyo in just a few minutes. He is one of the world's most famous geneticists, and he's found that laughter can activate certain genes that can improve your health and also lower lower vibrations, high blood pressure, and also get rid of cancer as well. He's a fascinating man. He wrote a book called The Divine Code of Light, Awaken Your Genes and Discover Hidden Talents. I've read the book, and it's just a fascinating work he's done. He was the subject of a wonderful film called Inori, or The Power of Prayer, by a famous Japanese film director named Tetsu Shiratori. The film came out in 2007, and it's a fascinating film, and I urge everyone to try to get a copy and try to view it if you can. We will be going to Japan in just a few minutes to interview Dr. Murakami, so please stay tuned for our next hour. Thank you so much.